Chapter 68. Standing at the podium in the White House briefing room, Zach Herney felt the heat of the media lights and knew the world was watching. The targeted blitz performed by the White House press office had created a contagion of media buzz. Those who didn't hear about the address via television, radio, or online news invariably heard about it from neighbors, co-workers, and family. By 8 p.m., anyone not living in a cave was speculating about the topic of the president's address. In bars and living rooms over the globe, millions leaned toward their televisions in apprehensive wonder. It was during moments like these, facing the world, that Zach Herney truly felt the weight of his office. Anyone who said power was not addictive had never really experienced it. As he began his address, however, Herney sensed something was amiss. He was not a man prone to stage fright, and so the tingle of apprehension now tightening in his core startled him. "It's the magnitude of the audience," he told himself. And yet he knew something else. Instinct. Something he had seen. It had been such a little thing, and yet he told himself to forget it. It was nothing. And yet it stuck. Tench. Moments ago, as Herney was preparing to take the stage, he had seen Marjorie Tench in the yellow hallway talking on a cordless phone. This was strange in itself, but it was made more so by the White House operator standing beside her, her face white with apprehension. Herney couldn't hear Tench's phone conversation, but he could see it was contentious. Tench was arguing with a vehemence and anger the president had seldom seen, even from Tench. He paused a moment and caught her eye, inquisitive. Tench gave him the thumbs up. Herney had never seen Tench give anyone the thumbs up. It was the last image in Herney's mind as he was cued onto the stage. On the blue rug in the press area inside the NASA Habosphere on Ellesmere Island, Administrator Lawrence Ekstrom was seated at the center of the long symposium table, flanked by top NASA officials and scientists. On a large monitor facing them, the president's opening statement was being piped in live. The remainder of the NASA crew was huddled around other monitors, teeming with excitement as their commander-in-chief launched into his press conference. "Good evening," Herney was saying, sounding uncharacteristically stiff. "To my fellow countrymen, and to our friends around the world." Ekstrom gazed at the huge, charred mass of rock displayed prominently in front of him. His eyes moved to a standby monitor where he watched himself, flanked by his most austere personnel, against a backdrop of a huge American flag and NASA logo. The dramatic lighting made the setting look like some kind of neo-modern painting. The 12 Apostles at the Last Supper. Zach Herney had turned this whole thing into a political sideshow. Herney had no choice. Ekstrom still felt like a televangelist, packaging God for the masses. In about 5 minutes, the president would introduce Ekstrom and his NASA staff. Then, in a dramatic satellite link-up from the top of the world, NASA would join the president in sharing this news with the world. After a brief account of how the discovery was made, what it meant for space science, and some mutual backpedding, NASA and the president would hand duty off to celebrity scientist Michael Tolland, whose documentary would roll for just under 15 minutes. Afterward, with credibility and enthusiasm at its peak, Ekstrom and the president would say their goodnights, promising more information to come in the days ahead via endless NASA press conferences. As Ekstrom sat and waited for his cue, he felt a cavernous shame settling inside him. He'd known he would feel it. He'd been expecting it. He'd told lies, endorsed untruths. Somehow, though, the lies seemed inconsequential now. Ekstrom had a bigger weight on his mind.